My name is Chris Raymer. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. Y'all see this? I'm watching it. Just saying. We don't want to go too long. So, I am delighted to be here, guys. I have a home group in Ingram, Texas. Ingram's about 60 miles, 65 miles just northwest of San Antonio. We're about like in the center of Texas. And I've got a home group called Ingram Solution Group. We're a little big book group. And in our format, it says, we're not here as a dumping ground for your problems. Please feel free to come before or after if you need to talk. But during the meeting, we're going to talk about this. And it's pretty good. And we get to, yeah, some of y'all look like I just slapped you. Listen. We can set these meetings up any way we want, and it's a fine meeting. Y'all come see us. Some of y'all in here. God, I know a bunch of y'all in here. It's the coolest. And some of y'all have met on Zooms, and some of y'all have met in person at different conferences over the years. And God, dang, you live long enough, you learn a lot. You know, you meet a lot of people. What the heck? So. Just, I am delighted to be here. And I need to thank the committee and everybody, Bobby and Amy and Jacqueline, anybody that had anything to do with getting me here, I sure do appreciate it. It's tough, isn't it, guys? Travel and doing these conferences right after COVID, and it's just, you know, it's been tough. But it sure is good to get to see a bunch of little smiling faces, and some of you haven't gotten any better looking, but some of you have. Well, I'm delighted to be here. If I don't do anything real stupid, next month I'll have 35 years of sobriety. And I'm from a little skinny guy that couldn't put together 30 days for 7 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's something changed, and it wasn't my desperation. I got to tell you, I landed in the arms of some old geezers that understood what was in the big book and showed me how to get well. And that's part of my story, folks. I always got to say it. I love you guys, and I'm here to share my experience. My experience may be different than your experience, and please, you know, the old guys used to say, you want to piss anybody off in AA, just say anything. Go to a business meeting. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't matter what I say, somebody will take exception with it. And it's okay. I love you. Just my experience. You know, I got to share from my perspective what happened to me. And that's all I can do. It's like Billy did a great talk earlier, you know, other people trying to share. And you can't tell my story. My story, yeah. And from the amount of emails I get from all over the world, you know, there's a few people that can relate to what I'm saying. And it's just, that's it. So. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think there's anything on earth I love more than the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life. My mama used to go, we'd take her to the Eaton meetings with us, you know, just for, she'd come and she'd sit in those meetings like that and listen to people talk and the speaker like that. And she'd come out, and I can't tell you how many times, with tears in her eyes, and she'd just say, God dang, I wish we had that kind of love in our church. Yeah. And if you're not feeling that in your home group, let's help you find you one, okay? Because it's there, okay? Not all groups are created even, so I don't know what to tell you. I had a, golly, my twin brother and I, some of y'all know Myers, he's in the program too, and we were born out in West Texas, and I got two sisters and my twin, and mom was a professional artist for a billion years. Look up M. Lewis Raymer. What a pistol she was. And my father was a lithographer, was a printer, and a craftsman. And dad was an alcoholic. But you could look up alcoholism on both sides of my family tree. You know, no goofy stuff in our families, just like Bill was talking about earlier. I got to tell you, listen to some speakers. You know, I know that there's people in here and here that were raised by a pack of wolves. I know that. And I'm sorry. Truly. Just. I wasn't. I was in the front row of the Baptist church every time the door opened up. Y'all follow? Hindsight, we didn't have a lot of money. But I got to tell you, Pops taught me some work ethic, guys. I was working at 16 years old in a hotel bussing tables and started cooking at an early age. And I got a lot from my family. About 60% of this, folks, is genetics. I know this is an AA talk, and you won't find that in the big book, but the jury's in, guys. I've worked in the treatment biz as a clerical worker for 30 years, and I'm just telling you, guys, genetics. Look, I'm going to show you a little graphic illustration. Here's a little eggy right here. Here's a little spermy. Oh, I'm coming to get you. Yeah. 1953. Y'all got it? And I got the bullet. And that's just, you know, that's it. My two sisters, they freak us out. But still, I'd love them to death, both of them. They can sit there, and I'll watch my little sister get drunk one time. And I was pulling the hair out of her face while she was puking. She says, I'm never doing this again. She never did. Forever, Christmas time, we come on, Lisa, drink up, have a beer. You know, no, I've already had one. I'm starting to feel it. Me too. Come on, you know, come on, let's go. You know, get what? They're just not. That's two different things and different people. It's just that way. And, oh, God, bless them. Yeah. That's the way it was. I got to tell you real quick. I went to my high school, my 50th high school reunion. I was telling some of my friends in here earlier, I never saw so many old people in all my life. What is up with it? It was last weekend, and I'm sitting there next to a guy that I drank with in high school. Y'all follow? He was kind of a high profile guy in the hill country where we grew up, and came from a fine family. In high school, I'll never forget. It was the right after we graduated, and we're out on the property, and we've got a keg beer out there floating, and you know, we're just, you know, doing what we do, you know, in high school in Texas, football, that kind of stuff. And I watched him get up, and he looked kind of funny on his face like that, and he walked, there was a little bonfire there, and he walked right through the fire. Man, this was before rock and rollers were doing it. Y'all understand? I was like, what the hell just happened? And I'm looking, and I said, buddy, are you okay? Because like he said, yeah, I'm just done with this. I'm not going to do this anymore. He'd gotten accepted in college. Y'all follow? He wanted to be a doctor. He understood that this was going to affect him. And I said, you know, well, good luck with it. All right. Well, go for it. And I'm sitting next to this guy right now. He's a gabillionaire. Y'all follow? He is. And he's a sweetheart of a guy. Y'all understand? Just like, yeah, we all just went different ways. He could stop. I made a decision. This is not, I don't like the way this makes me feel. Boom. I don't like sometimes the way it made me feel either, but I wasn't going to stop. Because sometimes it made me feel, yeah. It was an old friend of mine stole a bottle of Boone's Farm apple wine. I don't care where I speak in this world, guys, and I get to speak all over this world in all my years. You know, all the old hippies in here, they light up like I just said something. Some of you little youngins in here, listen, on your next relapse, go see if you can find some of that. Okay, I don't know. I don't even know if they still make it or not, but it's lime green. It's like, I don't think there's a grape in it, but it'll get you downtown quick. We leaned up against one of those big old 700-year-old cypress trees down there on the Guadalupe River. I pass by it every time I go into town. See that same old tree. And there it was. And drank that bottle. He didn't like it. He said, I could have it. I made sure. You don't want any more of this, correct? He says, no. And I finished that little bottle. It was little, like this. You know, and I walked across that field that night. It was about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. Big old full moon, colder than heck in the hills, and I knew instantly why Dad drank. I got it. It were good. Guys, y'all got to understand, there's a lot of people out there, I hate alcohol. I don't. If I could drink it and still get that effect like that, y'all understand? I went in there, called the best looking girl in school, and Mom said, it's a little late to be calling anybody. Yeah, you know, she'll take my call. She didn't, and but it didn't matter. Y'all understand? It was okay. And I knew I was going to continue to do it until I couldn't. You know, it was okay. And just got to hold it together. I didn't want to end up like my dad. Y'all follow? Dad was a sweetheart, guys. He never raised his voice to us. But he was not a happy camper. And that was welcome to alcoholism. And high school, again, all the next year, no problem, parties, everything was okay. For a long period of time, you know, it was okay. graduated from high school. My brother dropped out of college, and we decided to drive to Houston, Texas. He got a Volkswagen somewhere. Y'all think I'm making it up. He had a bumper sticker on the back that said, "Get drunk and be somebody." I don't know where the bumper sticker came from. I don't know. It was on the, I remember driving to Houston, Texas. A couple little country guys, you know, we got us an apartment with 15 other guys, it seemed like. I don't know. You know how it is. And back in the, y'all remember, this is like early 70s, right? Trimline phones, green shag carpet. Oh, my God. It was like bachelor pad. We couldn't buy booze at that age in Texas. You had to be 21. We weren't yet. But the next door neighbors were. And so, you know, we get booze and we drink. And I'm apprentice in a big hotel there in Houston and doing really well. And just, it's going to be okay. Until it wasn't. I'm working every day, guys. And the problem stems from this little fact that I can't sometimes control how much once I put it in my system. There's a period of time it was okay. And that, the book will paint a picture sometimes that every time I drink, I black out. You know, every time I drink, I drink to excess. That's not true. In the progression of the illness, all of us had times when I could go have a couple glasses of wine with dinner and go home, for God's sake. It's just, but if you don't die, you know, sooner it gets gradually, your tolerance levels start changing and you end up in trouble. And I start making these geographic cures. You know, I remember calling my mom, telling her, I got a job offer in Austin, Texas. And she, like, there's no booze in Austin. You know, I'm drinking. This is back in the day at the home of the armadillo. Remember? Yeah, back, it was crazy. And I got a job at a country club, making more money than I'd ever made. And everything on the outside looking good. And I'm stayed there a couple of years, holding it together. Just moved to Atlanta, Georgia. I was in Atlanta for 9 whole months. You can't live in a town where they don't sell booze on Sundays at all. That is alcohol abuse. You can't. No. Got drunk one night and packed my bag and drove back to Texas. It was just that simple. That's the deal with the food business, guys. You can quit a job 10 o'clock in the morning, and by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you have a better job. That's the way it is. It's still that way today. But I'm bouncing around a whole bunch. I went to Vernon. I got out of the food business for a minute, got back in, went to Houston. On one of the forays, I bought a little barbecue restaurant with a couple of partners. And a year later, I left them holding a bag. You know, just walked away from it because I needed to. I'm looking for something. Any of y'all ever done this? You know, I'm looking for something out there. God, if I could just get that job at the country club, everything would be okay. I get the job at the country club. Guess who's not okay? If I could just get we could just buy the house. If I could just sell the house. If we could just, oh God, if I could just get married. If I could just kill her. I think everything would be. I know there's some people out there, guys, that don't want to talk about that. But just real quick, this little piece. I know what separates us as alcoholics from other people is the physical craving that Doctor's Opinion talks about. The physical craving and the mental obsession that Bill Wilson does such a beautiful job from 23 to 43. I understand that. I got that mental obsession. But guys, Bill Wilson gets crystal. What? I happen to have a big book right here in front of me. It's talking about resentment's the number one offender. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. There's people, we used to talk 20 years ago about the spiritual malady from the podium, and we'd have people picketing the workshop out front, you know. It's just like, this is unheard of. Folks, let me ask you a question. When you stop drinking, do you get better or worse? Sing it, brother. It's a fact. No, it's a fact. Because, I mean, I've seen it a gazillion times. And that's why it was so frustrating for me. I can stop drinking for short periods of time, but the internal condition starts to kick my butt. I'm miserable. And it doesn't matter how much money I'm making or how pretty she is or whatever. I got to change. I've got to do something. Early 70s, late 70s, started taking antidepressants and seeing therapists up in North Texas. And I moved her she was a sweetheart, and drug her away from Houston and her family up to North Texas to be closer to my twin brother because it's very important, and got another good job and bought a brand new little house and for us, and you know, got a semi-new pickup truck. In Texas, that's the Holy Trinity right there, guys. Y'all understand that? Girl, truck, and job. You got that? You're golden. And I had all of that, you know, and I'm miserable. I'm just not happy. Some of you guys are confused by this because you've never stopped. It's, you know, I don't understand about that spiritual malady. Yeah, I know, but you're still on 15,000 medications. So it's treating it. I shouldn't have said that. That's nasty. Okay. God. Alcohol's not the problem. Alcoholism's the problem. And not drinking doesn't treat alcoholism. God treats alcoholism. That spiritual experience, that's what Bill Wilson is saying. Having had a spiritual experience as a result of the steps. Yeah, duh. Yeah. Who knew? I came home one night with that nice girl and had a pushing match. And I don't remember what the fight was about. I always say it. I don't remember much about it. I'd been doing some outside issues. This is the early 80s. Everybody, we thought we were Don Johnson, you know. I can still hear Miami Vice song come on, and it triggers me. Oh, my God. Bill was cute this morning talking about trigger. I don't know what it was about. I came home, and I'd been loaded a little bit, and I shoved her. And I remember she asked me to leave, and I did, and it came back a few hours later. She sobered up a little bit, and she let me in the house, and we had a conversation. And she didn't know about the cocaine, and she had no idea about how much I was drinking. She, you know, it kind of explained why our checking account was zero. And, she said, if you want to stay married, you're going to have to stop. And without hesitation, with tears in my eyes, I looked her in the face and told her I would quit. Guys, I'm hating my life now. Y'all understand? I realize that this alcohol is not a solution. God dang it. There's so many people out there. They just, well, you know, if you get tired enough, you'll quit. Really? You know how many hard drinkers are in Alcoholics Anonymous? Y'all read on page 20 and 21, it talks about moderate drinkers, hard drinkers, but what about the real alcoholics? There's a lot of people in AA that are not even alcoholics. I'm not knocking them. I'm not saying they're not welcome. I'm just saying they don't have to do a damn thing in this program except come to a couple of meetings, drink too much coffee, and talk trash. Y'all with us? I love them. No, I don't. I wish they'd all go away. I'm trying to be honest here. But there's always somebody who'll come up after the meeting and they want to take exception with me. Oh yeah, if an alcoholic's mouth moving, he's lying. You know, no, guys, you need to understand. Tears. I've seen too many people come into treatments, places where I've worked with. I mean, slinging snot, crying, begging for help. They want something to change. They just don't understand. They can't manage the decision to stay stopped. There's too many people out there that believe that if we just make up our mind, we could stop. That's called a behavioral problem. If you could stop on your own power, the book is saying you're not one of us. If you can just quit, then go do what you got to go do. Rock on. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous the next day with every intention of stopping. And went to the meetings, and they were the nicest, sweetest people up there in North Texas. And keep coming back, you little knucklehead. It works if you work it. And they were just sweethearts. And a week and a half later, Chef asked me if I'd stop after the work for a beer and go over some function sheets for the next week. And I drank a beer. And I'm patting myself on the back because I didn't get drunk. But you see, that wasn't my deal with her. My deal wasn't that I wasn't going to get drunk. My deal was that I wasn't going to touch another drop. She started the process of leaving. And I continued to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd go in there for a couple of weeks. Y'all understand? And the pain would gradually outweigh the benefits in my head. I'm going to a meeting every day. 90 meetings in 90 days. Oh, my God. Stupid. I said it at Founders Day this year. God, I just hate that. I think we should tell people to go to as many meetings as they can go to. But when you start putting a number on it, you set them up for failure. Thank you. And then somebody makes them start over. I just like, oh my gosh. I'm going to meetings and I can't stay sober, guys. I'm just nuts. I come in with conviction and I sit there and then I'm alone. After the meeting, everybody's gone off to dinner and I'm sitting there by myself and I don't have a sponsor and I don't own a big book and I go home to my little apartment with my two little stinky ferrets and I'm just, hey, you want to get something to drink? Okay. I go get it. Oh, and we have a party. Oh my God. And I would just drink and that's what, come back the next day, pick up a chip. Some old bastard sitting in the corner. I knew that little one-eyed guy didn't want it. Thank you for kicking me one more time. I'm in and out. I just can't. I'm going where I've been going. I know what I'm doing. I'm in IOP. I'm in therapy. Y'all understand? I'm on 7 prescription medications a day, all doctor prescribed. I'm not out there doctor shopping like some of you losers. Listen, I have the legitimate psychiatric disorders. It looks a lot like untreated alcoholism. Oh my God. Yeah. And I'm taking all these medications on top of everything else. And I mean, I'm a mess. And geez, picked up a stack of return checks one night and went to back to the little apartment, opening them up, and rent check had bounced. Y'all remember back in the olden days where if you bounced 10 checks, they would put 10 envelopes. Each one seemed very wasteful to me. You'd have the suspense of opening, please not the rent check, please not the rent, oh shit, the rent check. You know, and there you, I'm going to have to go to my sister-in-law, bless her heart, and borrow some more money. So y'all, I'm 35 years old, guys. I'm working for my twin brother because I can no longer cook. I got kidney damage and liver damage. I've been in AA for 7 years. I picked up more chips than there's people in this room. Maybe not quite that many. Self-pity got me, folks. And I went to the medicine cabinet, took a couple of bottles of pills and tried to off myself. Heard a voice that night about the time those pills kicked in and said, don't do this, go back to AA. And I'm arguing with the voice. Y'all understand? Buddy, I've been there, I've done that. How many people have I seen come into treatment, come out of detox and look up on the walls and see that this is a 12-step fellowship? Y'all understand? And they look at this, oh shit, I've tried AA. It doesn't work. And then you talk to them for a few minutes and find out they did exactly what I did for 7 years. Just all they're doing is going to meetings. Guys, I don't know why I was intervened that night. But I made a promise the next day. I made myself sick, laid down on the bed. Next morning, that voice was still in my head. Go back. I said, okay, one more time. As luck would have it, I don't talk about it much, but there was a piece of equipment that's never broken down in the history of the world. You'll follow? Cast iron, solid piece of equipment. And it broke that day. And because I was working on it, I had to stay late, which meant I couldn't go to the meetings where I used to go that were 25 miles away. Make sense? I had to go to a different meeting. One this old AA guy showed me one time. He said, man, if you ever need to get to a meeting, go to this one over here. This is a big book meeting over here. I didn't know sure what a big book meeting. You ain't going to get a date in there, that's for sure. But I went. And sure enough, I went in the back door, guys. It was this stuff. A bunch of people in there, long, skinny. Everybody smoking in there. That's back in the day. Excuse me. And I got real self-conscious, started to back up. This little girl got between me and the door. I can't not tell it, guys, because it's the truth. She got between me and the door and got her finger in my belt loop. She said, sit down, cowboy. You're not going anywhere. What? And I said, okay. Her sponsor was across the way and couldn't get to me. She said, get him. And she did. I get emails from all over the world, guys. Men sponsor women and women sponsor women in Germany. Guys, she didn't sponsor me. I asked her to, but she said no. She just stopped me from leaving the room. God, thank you for caring. Guys, y'all realize that if she hadn't caught me, you'd have had a different speaker here tonight, I guarantee you. Because I was going to go finish what I'd started the day before. God. Chairperson had seen me up in North Texas for years, guys, and he's shaking his head and says, God dang, welcome, buddy. Welcome back. He said, let's go around the room. He kept looking at the steps on the wall. He said, let's go back. Let's go go around and let's share how our lives have changed as a result of working the steps. I'd been in AA a bunch of years, guy. I'd never heard anything like that. Y'all thought, because I knew what was coming. Let's tell Chris how we got here. And you're going to tell me your scary goddamn stories about how many people you chopped up, put in plastic bags, and how many times you went to prison. And y'all understand? Y'all haven't listened, listen, guys. Your stories are important. I'm telling you a bit of mine tonight. Y'all understand that from the podium? It's important in a 12-step call. Buddy, you got to have a story. You can't just go up and just walk up to somebody. You found Jesus. You know, this is not going to work. You know, you got to have a story. But we kill a lot of people by trying to scare them into recovery. Y'all understand that? I'm going to go ahead and say it. You know, you got this lady sitting on the front row here, right? She's got an $800 Louboutin bag. Y'all got her in her lap. She just drove in a Lexus. Y'all follow? She's coming in because she's got to get a sheet signed because she got in a little trouble. All right? So we're going to go around and start scaring. Yeah. Well, let me tell you how you got here. I went to prison and I went to chopped up these people and I did all this and all this. And this lady's just gradually clutching her purse closer and closer to her body like that. Oh, and by the way, she ain't ever coming back because she's never going to do that. Guys, we all, the illness will progress different in different people. Y'all understand that? And some people are going to be protected by their beauty, by their intelligence, by their money. They're not going to experience some of the low. They're not going to end up on the street. Thank God. But had you known the questions to ask, you could have diagnosed me at 18 years old. Physical craving, mental upset. That's what we're supposed to be trying to help this lady figure out. Are you really one of us? Happened to me so many times it wasn't even funny. Remember me? I've never quit. I've never been fired from a job. I've never been late to work once. No, not once in my whole entire life. Ever. Ever. I'm pretty proud of that. Oh my God. Y'all, I'm not living on the street. We got to stop trying to scare people into recovery, folks. The only thing that ties this beautiful room together, look around this place, guys. We got some fine-looking people in here. We got a few homely dogs, too. But we got fine people. Men and women, black, white, gay, straight. I don't give a shit. Yankees? Oh, my God. Okay, but what ties us all together? The only thing that ties us together, guys, is the symptoms of alcoholism. It's not our drama. It's not our story. That's why I use the books when I teach with the abridged, without the stories and about. Come on, just let's get to cut to the chase. I'm in AA for 7 years, don't even own a big book. I'll take responsibility, but I don't know at what point the newcomer doesn't know what to ask. But somebody needs somebody to go grab them and, you know, noogie noogie. I don't, you know. Yeah. We'll see you tomorrow. Keep coming back. That's not working with others, guys. I'm sorry. That's not. Sorry about the sarcasm. They went around the room that night and talked about it. Some of you have heard me talk about it 1,000 times, but I'll never forget their faces. There was a little girl kind of catty-cornered, and she got her a brand new car. She was a little year and 3 months sober. And she's got her little car keys, and she got her a brand new car out in the parking lot. And I'd just been turned down for a car loan for $500, trying to get a bank loan for an old beat-up pickup truck I was trying to buy. And couldn't even get that because my credit's through the toilet. And this little girl's just got her a brand new car. The guy sitting next to her started him a little landscape business. Y'all follow? Yeah. Making a little money. Lady at the end of the counter, and she's in her 40s, and she'd gone back to art school, and she got her degree, and she was out there painting. I love art. I'm talentless. I come from a family of artists, you know. Look up Lisa Raymer. That's my sister. That's the gene pool I come from. Holy shit. Unbelievable. I just got the looks. That was all I got. Guys next to me kept tapping me on the shoulder. I kept jumping because I couldn't see him. And he got it billfolded. And he opens it up. He's got these little Polaroid pictures of his little rat kids in there. You know, and he said, AA boy came to AA, you know, met AA girl and like AA campus. And they're, you know, they had little AA babies. And and he's sitting there crying about his little kids. Y'all follow it? Just he's got a whole different life. Guys, I'm less than 24 hours away from a suicide attempt. Y'all understand that? And these people gave me exactly the one thing I needed, was more than anything, which was hope. If they'd have gone around the room and tell how they got here, I'd have shot myself. I don't care how you got here. Can you share, is it possible to wake up in the morning and not think about drinking? I'm walking out the door and these two old guys got hold of me afterwards and they came up and got me and they were old cowboy guys. Man, they were carrying big books, you know, the kind of books I'm talking about with duct tape around them. You know, they're all banged up and I'm looking and they said, Chris, can you sit with us for a few minutes? We need to try to help you figure out why you can't stay sober. And remember, guys, I got the doctors and the psychiatrists and everybody on my, you know. I really don't want to sit with these old cowboys. Y'all should have seen this guy. He was a stereotypical Texan. Y'all thought cowboy hat, y'all thought tan pants, he had a snap white shirt, you know, little buttons. Yeah, belt buckle about the size of a trash can lid. Y'all think I'm making this shit up? He had a Cadillac out in the parking lot with bullhorns on the front. His name was J.R. I know, everybody's shaking their head. I'm not making that up. He's long dead now, guys, long dead. But what a sweetheart of a guy. And he said, just sit with us for a few minutes. God, it took them about 20 minutes to do this. They were in a hurry to get home. Y'all understand, this was after the sick. It was 7 o'clock. It's time for them to go home for dinner. And they stayed with me that night just for a second. And just says, let's show you. Let's see if you can figure this out. And they opened the book for the first time and they talked about the physical craving in the doctor's opinion. And they talked about the mental obsession, that beautiful paragraph on page 24 that says, we have lost the power of choice in drink. They talked about the insanity of the first drink. He said, Chris, in that spiritual malady, why is it that you get worse when you stop drinking? Your internal world. The bedevilments on page 52 start coming back. The fear, the loneliness, the low self-esteem, that feeling of uselessness. All of this stuff starts to come back the further away I get from the alcohol, which fixes that. Your families don't understand sometimes, folks. They don't understand. He's just partying too much. Guys, this stopped being a party a long time ago. The kid's not drinking because he's partying. He's drinking because it's the only thing that makes him feel comfortable in his skin to just breathe. Just go through the day. Get a job. I went home that night. For the first time in 7 years, I knew what was wrong with me. I'd called myself an alcoholic since I was 18. I knew there was a problem. I didn't understand what it meant to be an alcoholic. And they said, Chris, if you work these steps with us quickly, I'll guarantee you, you can have a spiritual experience and your life will change. You can recover. And I started to argue with him because I've been in AA 7 years. Y'all follow it. You know, you can't recover. You'll always be recovering. You should be quiet. If you work the steps, your life is going to change. I promise you. Okay. See you in the morning. And I came home the next... We went to a meeting and they showed me how to make a pot of coffee. And after the meeting, y'all understand? We got in the back room and we did a third step prayer. We went to lunch and came back and they gave me a notebook and it says, start fourth step right now. Start writing down the people that you hate. Well, I said, yeah, I'm going to put your name on it. He said, that's okay. That's okay. Knock it out. 2 weeks later, I've got a completed fourth step. Week and a half, 2 weeks later, and I'm sitting on the tailgate of my truck and it dawns on me that the obsession's gone. I'm surrounded by liquor stores. Y'all understand? I got a drug dealer I could call. Friday. I got money in my pocket. Nobody's out there, and the obsession's gone. Guys, I've seen this happen thousands upon thousands of times. Don't be listening to somebody that's going to tell you that it's going to take years to recover. That's not true. It's not true. Bill Wilson's in Towns Hospital 9 days, detoxing, writing the men's letters from the hospital. Ebby took him some books and working through this what was going to be the spiritual program of action. Come on, guys. And the obsession lifted while he was there. But we want to sit here from our spiritual mountaintop and tell people it takes a year to recover. Yeah. Too many people out there killing people, telling them, you can't sponsor till you're 2 years sober. Thank God Bill and Bob missed that. I don't know. You know, what? I've seen it, guys. Do I get a little... Yeah, I know. I know I do. I freak some of y'all out because I get a little passionate about this and a little jumping around. But I get to see out there in my industry, I get to sit there and listen to thousands of people want to take shots at Alcoholics Anonymous because it doesn't work. And they're listening to all this side stuff that's not based in any kind of truth. Just somebody else's stupid opinion. What does the book say? How many guys have I tried to sponsor who says this won't work? But they've never... finished the fourth step. They've never made any amends, and they won't work with others. I've got to tell you real quick. A week after that, the guy came up to me, one of those guys that sat with me that night, and said, "Chris, this is our group consciences is at the end of the month, and we want to nominate you for chairman of the cleanup committee here at the group." And I said, "How cool is that? I am so not interested. You know, I am just, remember me, the most important person here, held up my little desire chip? Yeah, no, thank you. And but you've been in the food business. You know how to clean it, you know." "Oh, I see." He said, "Come to Group Conscience anyway, since you've never been to one." I hadn't. So I went. Y'all know the rest of the story. They railroaded me. There was 30 people in that room, and they unanimously voted me as chairman of the cleanup committee. I went in afterwards. This guy, we're cleaning up the kitchen, and I'm just grousing, and I'm just like, "I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I'm way too busy to do this." I said, "Well, listen, if I'm going to do this, if you could give me a list of the other committee members so that we can organize a cleaning rotation, you know, for the club and like that." He spit coffee clear across the kitchen. He said, "Chris, there's no committee. You're the janitor at this group." God dang. I was expecting a little office maybe, you know. I was gone for a couple of days. I wasn't going to ever come back. And I finally did. My brother let me off work, and Friday afternoon, about 1 o'clock, I locked myself. They gave me the keys to the place, and I locked myself in that club. Basically, it was out of spite. "I'll show you." Y'all follow? And I cleaned that place like a big dog. All that nasty brown stuff in the coffee pots. Yeah. What is it about AA club bathrooms? What, you think this is a filling station? Pick the paper up. What? So all these years, I'm still fanatical about it. I cleaned that place like a big dog, guys. Those chairs with a ruler, y'all understand? This place walked. Yeah. And I'm sitting back there. It's 5:30. The meeting starts at 6. Got a fresh pot of coffee from a little boy that's never done anything in 7 years in AA. I did pretty good day's work. And I hear this lady walk in the front door. I can hear her because I can't see her, right? It's a long hall, linoleum floor. And she's sliding in. She had them little slippers on. This was the matriarch of the group. Y'all follow? She was like 140 years old. At least. She's old as Methuselah. And she looked like a little question mark. She's about this tall, you know? And she slides in like that. And I can hear her in the back. I can hear her squealing in the kitchen. And she goes around to the bathroom. And, oh, my God. And she's like making a bit. And she stuck her head around the door. She said, "Did you clean this place?" And I'm sitting there in my little Through the Loom t-shirt, y'all follow, soaking wet. Just me and her and the group in the whole building. I said, "Yes, ma'am." "I'll cry in front of you." And she walked around behind me. And I was sitting at the table, and she slid her little bony arm around my neck, and I could still feel her voice on my cheek. And she said, "Boy, we need you. Come on, guys." Do you know how long it had been since anybody had said, "We need you to do anything but put your hand behind your back"? We need you to leave the premises, sir. I'm going to say it again, guys. I didn't try to commit suicide November 13, 1987, that night before, because I was drunk. I wasn't in a blackout. I tried to off myself because I felt absolutely useless, hopeless. You'd be amazed what a few little words of encouragement can do to somebody. It changed my life. It created a monster. You couldn't come in that club without me checking your feet first. There were times I was not very popular at my group, I must admit. It's just something we got to look at. Real quick, because I'm looking at the clock closer than y'all are. I got little business cards, guys, and I can give you my number and my email. And if any of you guys want a copy of this, there's an old Grapevine article that Bill Wilson wrote in 1961. This was 10 years before Bill passed away in 1971. And one of the better articles. Some of those old Grapevine articles were spectacular that Bill ended up writing. This is The Dilemma of No Faith. The whole article is pretty spectacular. Though 300,000 did recover in the last 25 years, maybe 500,000 more have walked into our midst and then out again. Yet we can't well content ourselves with the view that all these recovery failures were directly the fault of the newcomers themselves. Perhaps a great many didn't receive the kind or amount of sponsorship they so sorely needed. So we didn't communicate when we might have done so. So we AAs failed them. I'll take that. How many times have I got busy with my homies and talking and laughing, and a little newcomer sitting in there all by himself, and I say, well, I'll get him in a minute, and then turn back around and he's gone. Because I didn't go say anything. It's not about sitting down and sponsoring them or taking them through the steps. Sometimes it's just about making them feel comfortable. Let me get you a big book, buddy. Let me show you what this is about. It makes all the difference in the world, guys. My book on page 129 says, in those first days of convalescence, nothing will so much keep you sober as intensive work with other alcoholics. Let him go as far as he likes in helping others. That's what he's saying. But we got people out there in AA killing people, telling people they can't sponsor until they're 5 years sober. Guys, we're not therapists. We're not bankers. I don't need to go to school to be a sponsor. I need to give a shit. Don't think for a second that you have any idea who you're going to help in this program. And don't think for a second that you know who you're going to be helped by. Because I've seen it 1,000 times, folks. Gosh. That little guy that you don't even, just not even sure if he's from the same planet that you're from. Yeah. And then watch him out there kicking butt, taking names. Just like, oh my God, watch this kid. Just, I wouldn't miss this show for anything. I need to say one quick little thing because it was a kind of a crazy week for me. I spent some time talking to some alcoholics that had given up, struggled trying to stay sober. One of the things that almost took me out, the spiritual warfare is that little voice in your head. Mark, my old sponsor, Mark Houston, used to talk about spiritual warfare. That little voice in your head that says you don't have time to help that person. You're not smart enough to help that person. You don't have enough sobriety to help that person. That's the spiritual warfare that we're dealing with. Because I got to tell you, if God dropped that little knucklehead in front of you, get him. The noose around some of us older people in here, guys, is that we want to drop it off. We'll let them take care of that. Okay, well, that's fine, but sometimes... whoever, but somebody's gonna. That's spiritual warfare, folks. Stop listening to the voice. That little voice that says that you're worthless, that you're no good. That's the stuff that takes us out. My years in the treatment business, my years sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous, let me tell you, some of y'all know exactly what I'm talking about. The number one cause of relapses, it's not your triggers. Ever. Y'all, that's not it. Self-pity. Self-pity's a bear. And it can be tough early on, and it can be tough later on. It's like what we were talking about earlier, folks. I mean, life's a bear. Life can throw you some nasty stuff. But the cool part is if you're in all three parts of the program, y'all understand? Unity, recovery, service, the whole bit. That if you're in this whole piece, guys, you're going to be able to walk through it with the help of other people in the group. There's people in this room I've called for years, needing advice, needing some help, just needing to hear a damn laugh. By yourself, you will rationalize and justify why it's okay to go back out the toilet. I don't care how long you're sober, by yourself alone. We saw more people during COVID, a lot of the old guys like me, who refused to get on Zooms initially. Okay, we can't go to our meetings because they've closed them down. We watched more of these people come back to treatment losing double-digit sobriety than I've ever seen in my life. All for the same reason. You start pulling back. One of the Al-Anon quotes, you know, and I'll paraphrase it. You can't pull back from human involvement without jeopardizing your spiritual connection. That's how we stay connected, folks. But I watch so many people struggle with this. They get out there, they leave treatment, they're 100 miles an hour, then work starts or whatever, and they stop doing the things that's necessary. Some old well-meaning knucklehead in the meeting told them that they can't. You're not ready to work with anybody yet. Guys, my guys, I don't care. They're out there about 3 weeks. Y'all follow their detox. Go get you one. Then call me. I'm going to walk you through it. I'm going to walk right there with you, and I'm going to show you how to do this, just like somebody did with me with my first meeting. We were talking about chairing our first meeting. I still remember my first meeting. I remember going in home and looking in front of the mirror, and I've got the stuff, and I was like, rarely have we seen a person fail. No, that's not right. Rarely have we seen a person. I'm a nervous wreck. And I remember the first meeting I did, and everybody said, that was a good meeting. Hot damn, you just thought I won the lottery. That's what we got to do. We got to get them on the path. You don't have to be well and perfect to do this. We get well and perfect by doing this. Bill Wilson said it. It's by helping others that we get to be helped. And we all nod our head, and we all say that true, but then we go home and we listen to the little voice in our head talk. Bill Wilson wrote this. He says, self-pity is one of the most unhappy and consuming defects that we know. It is a bar to all spiritual progress and can cut us off all... Can you read, Chris? Can cut off all effective communication with our fellows because of its inordinate demands for attention and sympathy. It is a maudlin form of martyrdom which we can ill afford. Y'all understand? Bill wrote some beautiful stuff about it because Bill suffered from it. He understood exactly what that's about. Guys, there's lots of us in here, guys. We talk about depression until the cows come home. Depression just sounds better than self-pity. Sorry to break that to you. You may be. But Bill Wilson wrote it on page 62, if you'll look at it. Y'all understand? He said, selfish and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problems. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate seemingly without provocation. Y'all should see your faces from this standpoint. Y'all follow? I have clinical depression. Okay, rock on. Chill. Maybe you do. I'm not against medications, guys, and I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying a lot of times it's just plain old all-American self-pity. One of the things that we got to look at, guys, real quick in the last 2 minutes I got with you, we got any cyclists in here? Bicycle? You can do it with the motorbikes too. It's the same thing. I know a bunch of y'all look like motorcycle guys. One of the first things they teach you when you're riding a bike, guys, out there on the road, regardless whether it's got a motor on it or not, I'm a cyclist, bicycle. But you get out there, he says, look where you want to go. Look where you want to go. Don't look at the, if you're riding down the road and there's a pothole right here and you're looking at the pothole, guess what you're going to hit? You hit the pothole. You will automatically steer towards the pothole. Fact. Some of y'all are going to try that going home tonight. Now listen, don't do that. But it's just the truth. They say, look where you want to go and your bike will take you that way. You're going down a hill, right? Don't look at the guardrail. Look at the track on the road where you want to go and it'll take you right back around. Your bike will carry you. It's the same stuff with life, guys. We spend an inordinate amount of time looking at the bad stuff, looking at the trauma, looking at the stuff. Buddy, the stuff that we've been through just brings tears to my eyes. God dang, it's not been an easy life for some of us. But you can't spend all the time looking at it. Had an old guy in AA one time who was also a therapist. She was a sweetheart. She just said, you know, you can't learn about the light by constantly analyzing the dark. Sometimes we got to get out there and we got to go find something cool that we really want to do. We got to get excited about our lives. And I've said it from 1,000 podiums and I'll end with it, guys. God gave us this deal, buddy. He gave us this opportunity to get well. Not so we could just not drink one stupid day at a time. So that we could finally get some power in our life to go do the cool things that we want to go do. I'm so grateful that I ended up in an AA group with a bunch of old men and women. And they weren't old. Just some of them were new, younger. But they were all on the same page, pushing in the same direction. And nobody was there telling us what we couldn't do. You can't date for the first year. You can't get a job. You can't do this. You can't do that. Shit. Nowhere in the book does it say that. Nowhere. You're going to make mistakes, guys. I started a little business in recovery. Didn't make any money. But God dang, guys, I had a hoot. I had a great time getting up in the middle of the night, getting all excited about something. You find something to get excited about, folks, and the rest of your life is going to be okay. Because that's what it's about. I think maybe I'm feeling particularly fresh with this because of that reunion. We had 43 people in our high school class in those 50 years that had passed away. I mean, the clock's ticking. And it's not okay that we're not happy. It's not okay that we're not happy. It's not okay that we're not kicking butt, taking names. Each of us in our own way. And it doesn't mean just about making money. It just, go paint some pictures. Go back to school. Start that little business. Come ride bikes with us. Go hiking. You'll die if you go hiking with him. I don't know. He goes, some of you guys go far. I mean, yeah, just, but let's go do, that's what it's about. That's what this whole thing was about. This picture that we painted of the world out there is that for the rest of our life, every day we're going to be in a smoky old building talking about how up our life is. It's not. We've got to pull that newcomer, Bill Wilson says, with a vision. A vision of out there what this is about. Power. We're powerless over people, places, and things. No, we are not. I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm pushing 35 years of sobriety. Y'all understand? I didn't get up this morning and choose not to drink. I got up this morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, to get run for a plane and did my prayer and meditation in the airport. Y'all thought, I'm doing that. Dig? Those are my choices. But I got some power in my life to be in a relationship I want to be in and work at a cool job that I love. And it's never too late, guys. In hindsight, you start looking back and says, God dang, that's what we could have done. I know it's scary. I got a great little article a lady wrote, and I'll send it to you if you want. I'll email it to you. Just let me know, and I'll email me, and I'll send it to you. Trying to knock you off dead center a little bit. Get out there and start, yeah. Happy people stay sober, folks. Miserable people don't. And I'll end with this. I did pretty good. For every one of you, I'll cry again. For every one of you guys in here, young and old, that came in and stayed, helped that little newcomer, I cannot thank you enough. Everybody's looking for a pill that's going to fix this thing called alcoholism. Everybody's thinking about looking for a new therapeutic modality that's going to fix this. You know what has worked for us for a whole gabillion years? 87 years now? Millions of us sober today because of this. But you've got to do it in order for it to work. You can't just go to a meeting and expect the miracle to take place. For every one of you that has stayed, some of you old geezers that didn't die and are still with us, Gary. I want to cry, Julie, thank you. Y'all understand? Y'all can't imagine how many people y'all are helping because of that. People that leave my facility, and it's a fine facility, they get connected with groups like y'all, come to conferences, get excited. They do great. Make us look good. The people that don't fall flat on their ass. We need every one of you, every single one of you, to be in the trench. Because I don't know who you're going to touch, but you're going to touch somebody. Thank y'all so much.